mean, there's a couple of things. We spent the first 6 months of Thought on Film reading Gilles Deleuze's Cinema One, and over the course of 6 months, we made it through about 30 pages of his text, which is, I mean, just gives you an idea of how complex sometimes these things can be. But then after that first 6 months, I spent the summer, I guess this would have been last summer, watching Slavoj Zizek's The Pervert's Guide to Cinema. So the reading was actually watching a documentary about cinema through the eyes of Zizek, which was kind of really fun. And he, I don't know, he's just such an outrageous character and thinker. But
yeah, earlier this year, actually, on the Arts Report, we talked to Astra.
Oh, Astra, yeah, yeah.
Who just did that film.
Philosopher's Walking.
Yeah, exactly. And Zizek's in that, and her first documentary was specifically on him. So that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how long the Thought on Film tonight starts at 6 p.m. How long do you expect it to go? Is there a cutoff?
I usually try to keep it at around 2 hours. Mm-hmm. After 2 hours, I think your ability to think critically sort of rapidly diminishes. Sometimes after the reading group, we go for drinks or go for food. Mm-hmm. So just because the reading group is over doesn't mean the discussion is necessarily.
Right. Well, Cheyenne, thank you so much for joining me to talk about it. And I really hope it goes well tonight.
Thank you.
No problem.
I appreciate your inquisitiveness.
That was Cheyenne Turion, the program manager and curator at Cineworks, and Thought on Film 20 is happening tonight at Cineworks. That's 1131 Howe in the back lane, through the back lane entrance. It starts now at 6 p.m. and it's free, so head on down. And that's it for me from the Arts Report this week. If you want to get in touch, you can always reach me at arts@citr.ca. And tune in next week at 5 for another edition. And up next is Julie with Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM.
Mountains and Air by George Stanley. Let up the world with your faith. To build up a world out of strange books in the absence of faith. Going to the store for a pack of cigarettes, going to Prince George, going to sleep, exactly the same trip. The hardest step on every journey is the last, and every step is the last downwind from the engine. Yet every one of us is expecting, is in a cornfield, realization, the answer ripening to the question. To have them both, the breath of hope in air, after harvest is impossible to even to lift your feet. The police shouts in the night, shouts in the brain, the voice tiny but confident as each grain is eaten. Answer to answer to answer lined up. There is nothing to do with this but to put up with it, live with it, paper your walls with it.
Don't switch the dial. I said, do not switch the dial. This is a test of the Tito Corporation on radio. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
good evening. You're listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is JC Peters, little thievery corporation in the background. So here we are for the next, hour this week. We have a little bit of extra time again this week to play a bit more poetry. But in case you've never been here before, welcome to CITR's Canadian Writing Show. Here on Audio Text, I like to play recordings of spoken word that I've been hearing around the city, read poetry like I did just at the beginning of the show, and I'll be coming back to George Stanley in a little while, do interviews with poets, anything to support the local art scene, the local literary scene, mostly in Vancouver, but across Canada as well. So before we get to listening to some of the poetry that we've got going on, I will be giving some listings of events happening around the city so that you can go and experience these talented Vancouver writers for yourself if you live in the city of Vancouver. So tomorrow is... today is September 23rd. It's Wednesday evening, just after 6 p.m. Tomorrow is Thursday, September 24th, and Mashed Poetics is coming back for its second incarnation at the Cottage Bistro. So this is an event where 12 poets are assigned a song from a different album, and in this case it's going to be Nirvana's Nevermind as a writing prompt. So 12 poets are going to be writing sort of on, inspired by covering Nirvana's Nevermind. So that should be a really interesting event that's going to be happening Cottage Bistro on Main Street at 9:30 p.m. and that's a $5 to $10 sliding scale. So that's a good thing to go check out tomorrow night. Friday, September 25th at Christiane's Lyceum, there's going to be an open mic. This is an open mic that happens every other Friday. And there's food, there's booze, there's tea. It's a really intimate, nice, unique open mic. So it's a good one to go to if you want to share your stuff or just hear something different. So Christiane's Lyceum is 3696 West 8th Street. So that's near Alma, starting at 8:30 p.m. So if you want to have some quiet poetry and music and stuff like that, that's your place for Friday night. This Saturday, September 26th, Awesome Face is coming back for the third or fourth time, I think. This time, the event is that Awesome Face finds a gun. So Awesome Face, if you haven't heard of them before, is sort of a kids group for adults. It's a hard band to explain. They have nap time and coloring and candy and songs like that have titles like Don't Get Drunk and Sleep With Your Friends and stuff like that. So it's always a really fun comedic event. There's sort of some poetry involved and singing and various things. But this is a particularly special show because the openers for Awesome Face is my new band, our debut as Possum Face, Awesome Face's cover band. So we're going to have something completely different as well for you to go and check out. Another thing that's quite hard to explain, and I simply won't until the show goes on because it's going to be a bit of a surprise for lots of us. Covering for us, Possum Face, is the Possum Face cover band Schlossum Schlace. So that's going to be Barbara Adler with her accordion. So definitely a good event to check out if you're involved at all in the literary scene in Vancouver or if you just want a few laughs. I guarantee that'll be a good night. So that's happening this Saturday, Café du Soleil, Commercial Drive in 5th, around 9 p.m., $7 to $10 cover. And if you wear a muscle shirt, you get the cheaper price, so that's up to you. Sunday is word on the street. So at Library Square, the Vancouver Public Library, 11 to 5 p.m., there's going to be a lot of publishers and authors and things like that, magazines all set up and indoors and outdoors at the library, just celebrating 15 years. So go and check out Word on the Street between 11 and 5 during the day on Sunday. Meet lots of people. Check out the literary scene in Vancouver from that perspective, and that should be really nice as well. Monday, September 28th, as always, there's going to be a poetry slam. This week, it is the Youth Slam. So youth 13 to 21 are welcome to come and read their poetry. The Youth Slam is actually astonishingly good. I can never get over how amazing the youth are, these youth poets are. And the feature this month is Morris Stegosaurus. So he sounds like a good time, even though I don't know anything about him, just based on his name. So those are some of the things happening here in Vancouver over the next week, and I will be back again next week with more listings, so you can always check in with audio text with some of the things that are going on in the city. So, last week I went to go see a show called The Gist. Maybe some of you were there. It was a mixed literary event, including Damon Schritter. I mispronounced his name last week, so I wanted to apologize for that. His name's Damon Schritter. Ivan Coyote, Brendan McLeod, and Dan Mangan all got together to share their storytelling skills in their various ways. And I was lucky enough to get permission to record the events from this night. So I have a few selections of the various things that we heard at The Gist, so that's what I'm going to be playing for you right now. First off, a story by Damon Schritter.
This isn't the full life plan, right? Like, I'll be an entertainer. I thought, you know, I'll get in the entertainment when I'm in my 20s and I'll do it through my 30s. And then I was thinking in my 40s, I would become an Olympic curler. Because you still got a shot at 40. It's like a practice sport, right? And I'm not talking like the lead guy on the curl. I'm talking about being like the fifth alternate curler in case there's a horrific curling accident. Then I would sub in, but I'd still get the medal and that sort of stuff. And then maybe, I thought in my 50s I might run for office because I'd be a successful comedian, Olympic curler, gold medal curler, politician. And then in my 60s I'd just become like a televangelist and rake old people for cash. That's just my life plan. You don't have to worry about that. So it's just, okay, here's the story I gotta get to. When I got into show business, I thought it would be like I'd be getting on a jet and flying to Las Vegas to open for Frank Sinatra. Right? That's the picture I had in my head, but it's not like that at all. When you start out, they send you to all these weird outposts all over the country. So I got a gig in Bella Coola, which is a little place at the bottom of a giant logging road, but they just tell you, like, I'm driving and like I got a little Hyundai truck at the time. It's more like a station wagon with the back cut off, one of those little Toyota type things, and they're like, oh yeah, you just take the road in, and it says a secondary highway, but what they don't tell you is that it turns into a logging road with like 18 degree hills. And of course, the truck can't take it, so I kind of snap like a little axle, and it's me and another guy. So I'm like, you know what? We'll get out of here. So I flag down like the first people coming out of town, and I'm like, can you give me us a lift to Bella Coola? We were comedians. We have to do a show. I'm like, well, we don't really like comedy, but we'll give you a ride back to the last town. I've been driving like 2 hours down this town. I don't remember there being a town at all, but these people must know they live here. So I get in the car and they drive me about an hour back up this road, and then they just dump me off at like this abandoned store with a payphone. They just fuck off on me like I'm in New York City. They're like, take care, right? So I phone the gig. I'm like, look, my truck's broken down on your logging road in. Can you send a tow truck guy to get it? I'm like, no problem, Damon. We'll send him in. They're like, how are you going to get here? I'm like, well, I'll just hitchhike in. Like, well, this is a one-way road. There's not a lot of traffic this time. And I'm like, don't you worry. I'm a big kid. I can take care of myself. So I'm standing underneath the sign that says Bella Coola, like 148 clicks for about an hour and a half with my thumb out. And it's snowing. It's October. It's grizzly country. I'm dressed in, like, the Kevin Bacon outfit once again. And I'm thinking, and not a car goes by. So I just start running. Like, maybe I can make the 148 clicks. Because when you think you're going to die, you do some weird shit, right? So I'm running down this road, and about a mile up the road, I come to a highways department crew yard. I'm like, oh my God, thank God, civilization, I'll live, right? So I'm knocking on the door and no one's there, so I look all through the salt pit past the raiders. I can't find anyone, but I find this highways department crew truck with the keys in it. I said, well, I'm not going to die halfway to Bella Coola, so I fire this bitch up. And I don't know if you've ever stolen a truck before, but you get that bad pre-fight adrenaline, like you're very quaky. It was hard to hold the steering wheel because you're overwhelmed with fucking breaking the law. So I'm tearing up this road, and about 10 miles up the road, I come around the corner, and there's the entire highways department crew repairing the road in matching trucks to what I've just stolen. So I come down, I'm trying to play it cool. I see like the guy in the grader come towards me, so I give him a little sort of salute. He nods back to me, and there's a couple of guys shoveling, so I fire them the guns, and they give me a little wave through. I'm like, holy fuck, I'm on my way to Bella Coola, right? About 15 minutes later, the CB comes on. They still got CBs in the trucks up there. It's like, oh, it's Ted. I'm walking up at the yard, one of our trucks is missing. You didn't happen to see one of our trucks, did you? The guy's like, yuck. I was like, well, is the guy helping with the sign or something? Like, nope, you went straight on through to Bella Coola. This guy's like, that's our fucking truck, right? So now I know these guys are coming after me, and the police have been dispatched from Bella Coola, and I'm in a little bit of a pickle here, right? It's a one-way road. I'm in the middle of this trap. So I come down the road, and I see the tow truck guy. Happens to be looking like he's got my truck on the tow thing. So I lock it up, and I do like a big chewy, and I spit gravel all over the guy. I just Gatling gun him with gravel. He just gets lambasted to the side of the truck. And then I drive back up, and I ditch it in like this little cove, and then I just come running down the road like I'm running through the hills of Bella Coola. And the guy's like, you get a ride with that highways department crew guy? I was like, yeah, something like that. That guy is a fucking asshole. He just wrecked my truck. I got dents all over me. I'm coughing from the gravel in my throat. I'm like, well, he was drinking a little. I was like, oh, yeah, fucking figures, right? These guys. So we get in the truck, and we go to turn around. As we go to turn around, my truck falls off the hoist. So he's out there, and he's looking it up. I'm sort of standing beside him. Now I can see these lights coming through the hills, so I know it's them coming to get me. So I start helping this. I'm just cranking up this truck with this guy. He's like, oh, man, you're the most helpful little fellow I've ever met. And so we load in the truck, and we're driving down, and now cop cars are flying by. So he's like, I wonder what the fuck's going on up there. I'm like, I got no clue, huh? So we get in, and he goes to repair the truck, and I go and do the show. And the next morning, I get out at like 7 a.m. I pick up my truck and I get the fuck out of town before anyone knows what's going on. So about a year later, I'm sitting in a bar here in Vancouver, and I meet this girl. I start talking to her, and she's like, oh, yeah, you know, and all sort of stuff. And she's like, oh, I'm from Bella Coola. I'm like, oh, you're from Bella Coola. I said, you know what? One time I had to steal this highways department truck. And she's like, you're the fucking guy. Yeah, famous in Bella Coola. Chomp on that. So. You guys, I think we're all on board now. There we go. Yeah, well, let's take this down to the second half.
You people feel like making some noise tonight.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, Cookie Monster's favorite radio station.
Good night, Chicago! Brutal!
I stopped trying to define punk around the same time I stopped trying to define Islam. They aren't so far removed as you think. Both began in tremendous bursts of truth and vitality that seem to have lost something along the way. The energy, perhaps, that comes with knowing the world has never seen such positive force and fury and never would again. Both have suffered from sellouts and hypocrites, but also from true believers whose devotion had crippled their creative drive. Both are viewed by outsiders as unified, cohesive communities when nothing can be further from the truth. I could go on, but the most important similarity is that, like punk, Islam is itself a flag, an open symbol representing not things, but ideas. You cannot hold punk or Islam in your hands, so what could they mean besides what you want them to?
CITR and the Vancouver International Film Festival present Twakor, The Birth of Punk Islam. Misfit Muslims the world over embracing a new subculture called Twakor, otherwise known as Punk Islam. The film follows the three misfit rebels who dreamed up the whole thing.
We should go out west sometime, just load up a van till we can't fit no more, and then have guys hanging off the side like in Rawalpindi, down the I-90. Get a van, make like an interstate jamaat.
Twakor, The Birth of Punk Islam, is played Saturday, October 3rd at 9:30 p.m. and Monday, October 5th at 1:15 p.m. at the Empire Granville Cinema. Brought to you by the Vancouver International Film Festival and CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
So before that little break, you heard a story by Damon Schritter, who is a comedian. He does a solo stand-up show. He's been doing it for a while, and he's also a part of the Best in the West, a trio of award-winning stand-up headliners, as well as a member of the sketch comedy group The Hog and Shrids Show, including Paul Meyerhog. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm sorry, and Damon Schritter. That was Damon Schritter. He was one of the people who was performing at the GIST show on Wednesday at the Anza Club. So next up, I'm going to play for you a story by Ivan Coyote, who is another one of the storytellers who were at this event. Ivan E. Coyote, you might have heard on the show before. She's a really, really good storyteller from the Yukon, but I'll let you listen for yourself.
So, like I said, I grew up in the Yukon. I have this big, huge family up there, and every once in a while, last month I went home for like 10 days. And I was doing research, for my new art project. And I went through as many family photographs as I could lay my hands on. Searching through this magic red bag of memorabilia, this shopping bag. My Aunt Roberta, she keeps stuffed away in the basement, sifting through this gigantic mishmash of memories. My mom, she keeps crammed into a big old cardboard box in the guest room closet. I haven't been able to figure out really exactly what my family has against, like, photo albums. I don't know. Anyway, and there's all this other stuff in there, too. You find weird shit, like your grade 2, report card. I found this drunk driving citation issued for one of my uncles in the 70s. The same guy who went on to be a Catholic priest later, but that's another story anyways. But anyways, I found this drunk driving citation for him, which wasn't out of character, actually, at the time. But it was issued at 10 a.m. in the morning. Which I did, I found it impressive, right? Anyway. I found tons of pictures of me as a kid. Way more pictures of me as a kid than I remember anyone taking at the time. There's this, one of my dad and my Uncle Rob. They're at either end of a broomstick, loaded down with lake trout, and me, I'm crouching on the ground underneath the fish. Fish blood splattered all the way up to my elbows, proudly holding up this string of grayling. And there's another one of me in a campground up north somewhere. I'm busting out of the willow bushes, this gigantic log of firewood on my back. And there's me and the first day of school in grade 1. In a lineup with all the other little girls on my block. And all the other little girls and my little sister, they're all in sparkly new dresses. And their little chubby knees, all scrubbed and squishing out at the top of sparkly new white tube socks. And me, I'm in blue corduroys, those black rubber boots with their red-brown toes and my Davy Crockett fringe buckskin jacket. Oh, yeah. And my grade 2 class photo, a front toothless me in a plaid shirt, pearly snaps, done right up, right up to the chin. Kind of sporting this sort of pretty slick Andy Gibbish kind of, flair do. It's good. And then my hockey photo, me and all my teammates all lined up. Only girl in the boys' league for 11 years. And none of this was surprising to me at all, right? I seem to be the exact same kid I remember being. What I couldn't believe at all in retrospect was that anyone in my family actually was surprised when I came out of the closet at 18. Seriously. Fuck, the evidence was everywhere. It's all over the photographs. I mean, how could anyone have missed it? I was horrified. I decided to investigate. So I called up my Aunt Roberta first, eh? It was almost 8:30 and she goes to bed real early. And I asked her if she ever, you know, suspected that I had caught the gay at an early age. If she ever wondered about the hockey and the buckskin jackets and the whatnot. And I heard the sound of kitchen chair complaining about being dragged across the linoleum. And then she sat down. She said, I know this sounds silly, but I always thought you were just who you were. An amazing little strong personality. I thought you got it from your dad. And then I asked her if maybe my gran, because she lives with my gran, if my gran had ever said anything to her about me and the gay, right? And she said, well, your gran's gone to bed already. I was like, what fucking time does she go to bed? Anyway, your gran's gone to bed already, but I do remember her saying one time that you were exactly right. All you kids turned out to be exactly who God meant you to be. I mean, you could call her in the morning and ask her if you want to, but I know that's what she's gonna say.
We are young, we have years ahead, maybe we might fall in love.
Let's air out her nose like this. I never labeled you as anything. I mean, keep in mind that we just didn't think like that back then. You were just boyish and you just did boyish things. Of course, I gotta say that, you know, any knowledge of homosexuality I would have had back then, you know, is from all, it would have gone all the way back to Victorian times, wouldn't it? All those novels. Probably skirted under my radar, no pun intended, because you were wearing hoop skirts and high button boots. And my mom, she swore somehow she had no idea whatsoever. My mind just never went there. Never went there. I just let you be who you wanted to be. Not very helpful with your little art project, I guess, am I? I'm sorry. My Aunt Kathy, she echoed my mom. I had no idea. Not a fucking clue. I just thought you were a little fucking brat because you refused to wear a dress to our wedding no matter what I did. My Aunt Nora, she said that she just figured, like most siblings, you know, we were just polar opposites, me and my little sister. Hey, Carrie was just a prissy little girl, and you, well, you know, you weren't the prissy little girl. I do remember thinking one time, I guess it's more like knowing somehow that you weren't happy. You just seem tense inside your own skin somehow. I mean, I knew there was something going on, but I didn't know what it was. We didn't have to have a label for everything back then.
There's a puzzle I work on endlessly, and I've got the sides and all the corners. There's a space. Yeah, there's a space. Lost some pieces. I
having omelets for dinner in the background. I got him on the phone. I said, you know, I cannot pinpoint exactly the moment that we all realized you had gone to the dark side. I do know you were all just glad you weren't born stupid. There's no cure for stupid. I do recall this one occasion, though. We were out at the lake, eh? And you gave me supreme shit because I've been drinking too much and I was not attending to my fishing rod closely enough, but I'm pretty sure that didn't have much to do with your sexuality. Uncle Rob, his brother, he was kind of pensive, thinking over his response before speaking, which frankly is unlike him. So, well, I mean, you can see why we might not have thought about it too much at the time, eh? Because there is a lot of hetero butch chicks out there, you know, especially in the Yukon, right? Gotta be careful. On the other hand, I guess a fella might have twigged, hey, due to your kind of unnatural aversion to wearing dresses, but who cares anyways? Besides, you know what I've always had to say about this kind of stuff? It's your dick, and it's your soap, and you can wash it as fast as you want. Dude's blood is running through my veins, too. That's the scary shit. So anyway, it appears that for all those years and all those photographs of that little tomboy, there was only one member of my family wondering about me. Was me.
So we are old and our son took the dog away, and fair enough, guess we're tired all the time. All the time.
If I can't marry Carrie Brown, believe I'd rather die.
You have wandered into the folk oasis. Welcome to it.
Stop the world and let me on.
You are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut, baby. I've been trying to change my dark ways, maybe.
Yes, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday night. It's me, Val, hosting 2 hours of eclectic roots music. Folk Oasis.
So just before that little break, you were listening to a story by Ivan E. Coyote, who was gracing us with her presence. She's a lovely storyteller, always really funny, but tender at the same time. Always a pleasure to see her reading live. You may have noticed that there was some music involved in that piece, and that was actually Dan Mangan, who was there at the Gist show as well. And it was interesting to be at this show because Dan Mangan has become I'm sure you've heard of him. He's something of an overnight success, and there are a lot of hipsters who are pretty excited about Dan Mangan existing in the world. So I was expecting the show to be pretty overflowed, but it wasn't for some reason. It was a really nice, intimate crowd. It was full, but definitely not overly packed. So it was really nice to hear some of Dan's music when it was just him and his guitar. I think there's something kind of magical about a live performance with just a guy and a guitar or a girl and a guitar. There's something about that that's quite special, and I don't think that it really translates over the radio, but maybe you can get a bit of a sense of how that sounded. So on that note, I'm going to continue to play a little bit more from Dan Mangan from that night. And there's a little cameo in the middle of his song of a poem by Brendan McLeod. So that's coming up right away.
She might be wearing a green chemise and a hat that she bought, 'cause it matches her jeans and the water she drinks. Well, it comes from the stream by the house. She might win in that hospital lottery. And I might be stumbling and cursing them all when she picks me up from the place that we both call disaster relief. For the rent must be paid by the first of the month, or in my case, 15th. It's good, but as far as I can tell, it's still heavy as hell when it's good. And I do like the road, but I'd be better at home. I will pine for the oak streets and pine for the cedars.
Neon bright beneath the moon, and I couldn't reach it. Not with a broomstick, not with that cow. how to jump over it, not in the cradle of a paper basket lowered by the empathetic arms of Orion. My feet never touched the sky, but I ran till my chest burst. The midnight alleys gave in and buckled under my rage. It took 2 days for everything to, like, slow down. When the train pulled to your door, my pulse stopped with the traffic. Everybody watched. A man pruning his bushes sees on a stem. An old woman amassing laundry off her land halted on a clothespin, the teeth of its open jaw frozen in anticipation. Everything in its own orbit came to rest, and the statuette bird, stoic dogs, steel flowers to greet me as my feet beat to your door. I thought, this is it. This is all we got. But I'm here.
Sorry if anyone's heart is hurting now. There is something about a guy and a guitar that I think is, you know, magical and special and all that, but also quite heartbreaking. It's quite a sad song. So I'm going to play something a little bit more lighthearted for you. It is a poetry show, but we don't want to just be crying during the entire hour of audio text. What I'm going to play next is actually one of my own poems, and I don't usually do this, but I bumped into a friend of mine when I was at the GIST show, and he had heard last week's show in which I played a lot of pieces from the finals, which was at Café du Soleil, the Vancouver Poetry Slam Finals. And I was there, I was one of the competitors, but I didn't want to toot my own horn too much, so I didn't play anything of my own. But he was, you know, kind of sad, and he said he wanted to hear something, which was very flattering to me and very nice, so I'll take the compliment. And I'm going to play this poem, which is sometimes called Tuesdays and sometimes called Unicorns. Hopefully it's a little bit lighter.
Sometimes I think I want too much from the world. Facebook depresses me. I have this idea that you are all outside, all 372 of you. from a stainless steel water bottle, and I probably wouldn't want it to hear me with me right now either. So maybe it is too much, but I can't help wanting to take the world in my fist and squeeze until unicorns and leprechauns appear offering me magic, saying, not only would I rather be in your arms, but I would rather take you in mine. And as I make my way slowly through the seemingly endless stock of red wine, I am hoping a unicorn will pick me up off this depressing floor and take me in its arms. And that is a little crazy. Unicorns don't even have arms. But here I am anyway, and what I don't understand about people is how they don't find themselves here too, waiting for wilderness magic to rescue them from boring floors and mediocre movies. And whether or not that unicorn ever finds me, well, till then I'll be writing poetry on my floor on a Tuesday evening, and it's the best I can do, at least until I jump out the window.
Thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
So, last night I was at an event called Back to the Source. I actually didn't know what the name of this event was for a while. It's an event at Nyala African Restaurant on Main Street, put on by foundationradio.ca, called Back to the Source. So this is an event that happens every other Tuesday, and I think that just now they're starting to do it every Tuesday, so you can go by at any week and not get confused by the every other thing. So it's sort of an open mic. It's not exactly an open mic. The organizer kind of invites certain people, and it's always an eclectic mix, and it's a really late night kind of thing, and it doesn't even get started till 11, and it's totally amazing, and everything that happens there is magical. And so I was there last night, completely exhausted, but so grateful that I did manage to make it out, because it was mind-blowing as usual. And another person who was there is Relevant, a friend of mine who is also a poet, who's been performing at the Vancouver Poetry Slam for a while, and he's recently decided to move away to Toronto. So I recorded what he was reading, and I thought I would share a bit of that with you, because he says this is his very last poetry reading in Vancouver, which is a sad story, so we will say farewell to him with this piece.
She had her palms pointed to the sky and her eyes watering from a life much too difficult for a child to live, praying that if she died, she would one day rise like a butterfly with love engraved on its wings. She bled tears for years since kicked out of her mother's womb at a premature state. Where she's from, shedding a tear is a lot like slitting a wrist. For the pain deeply contained inside this child's soul's got her jumping through the halo of a death wish. Only 9 years old, and she walks like a giant with battle-tested scars and a weary wisdom better saved for a later date. Like most women, she carried her family's weight on a still undeveloped frame. She was always called upon and never appreciated till this day. Her name was Ikram. She was my favorite cousin. With this high on life that can only be described as hyper, and this uncanny ability to break anybody up around her that was feeling low, was probably the only baby on the block that could change her own diaper, trying to find a four-leaf clover for directions to a rainbow. But that fierce independence didn't come without a cost. Was thrown on the floor in front of her grandmother's feet by a mother whose black hole of a heart was lost. Got slapped in the face by maternity's waist, cracking a piece of a newborn skull on the only mother that would have her, Earth. And even she couldn't soften the fall. That crack in the head led to a life plagued with uncontrollable seizures. Most newborns get a slap on the backside as an introduction to pain, but not for this special child. When she was born, the sky separated from the rain. For through every dark night, there is a bright day, so why not, as a welcome to this world, get the darkest out of the way. Every time she had an attack, it reminded her of her mother's shame. With this yearning to be wanted in the form of a loved one that never came. Now for every third world nation, there are third rate doctors that can't diagnose what it is that is wrong. The only thing that could calm her down were the soothing sounds my grandmother made while humming her favorite song. Her village convinced themselves every time she slipped into that out of body state, it was Shaitan that inhabited her shell and was the one to blame. See, Shaitan and the devil are the same, so every time she started twitching and foaming at the mouth, they would spit in her face. When I first witnessed this, I had to be physically restrained for two separate hospital visits were the result of my rage. When I left, I tried with all I could muster to convince her I would be back one day. Looking into my eyes as if I were the child that needed reassuring, she simply made me promise I would never forget her name. 2 weeks into December, I get a phone call from back home telling me my joy died from a violent seizure that resulted in her swallowing her tongue. 2 weeks into December was 2 days before her birthday. She never even made it to be 10 years young. She had her palms pointed to the sky and her eyes watering from a life much too difficult for a child to live. Praying that if she died, she would one day rise like a butterfly with love engraved on its wings. Until this day, every time I see a butterfly, I hear your favorite song humming along the whisper of a wind. And you will always live on in my heart. And your name, Ikram, will forever be engraved on my wings. Thank you.
So that was Relevant, a very talented young poet who you should definitely look out for at the Toronto Poetry Slam. I hope he continues to do work with writing in the future. So, coming back as promised to George Stanley, I just read a very short piece from Mountains and Air at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to continue to read a little bit more from that. And before I do, I just want to read to you what George Stanley says about this long poem. I'm reading from the new long poem anthology, the second edition, edited by Sharon Thiessen, so it's all Canadian long poems, I think. And George Stanley was born in San Francisco, but moved to BC in the 70s. And as at the time of this publication, I'm not sure if he still does, but he was teaching at Capilano College in North Van. And this is what he writes about his poem. Mountains and Air is a serial poem, a narrative which refuses to adopt an imposed storyline and completes itself only in the sequence of poems, which is from Robin Blazer. I learned to write the serial poem in San Francisco, and I have tended to begin writing one of these whenever I have a lot of new experiences that I feel the need to write poetry about, which is really my way of thinking about things. So this is a serial poem, Mountains and Air, and I thought it was interesting to just be reading the experiences of someone noticing what it was like to move to this completely new landscape. And I only moved to Vancouver about a year and a couple of months ago, so I can relate to that feeling of newness in this new place, in this new culture. It's quite different from Montreal, where I hail from. So this is from Mountains and Air, from George Stanley. 27-10-76. Where to get back to the truth? I don't have the truth in my hands anymore. These little stories don't even need the language. They use the peril language. Deep in the middle of everything, Germany, your picture of the Saskatchewan wheat pool. The mist rises off the river. The bears come down to eat the garbage, back of dog and suds. Stand up in the road like little boys in bear suits. This is big rock. This is car wash rock early in the season. Lake Else Avenue. No look back. When you get to the edge, you see nothing. I was born into a world of appearances, substantialities, soft colors, sharp noises, clouds closing. It had a rattle. Nothing has no name. You fight to get back to the familiar turns of phrase, the triangulations of recognition, the quantum jump into the next block under streetlights. Ask for a cigarette. The town shimmers, trembles. Feed this grinning transparency. Tell the truth. Learning to live alone. Learning alone. Why? Because there is no other person yet? No, there may be, but all seems alike to me, other than me, no other than me. To make me up, that was the way then, now made up, trimmed of useless branches, foliage hanging over the road, a good self, but off the road, a limbless self, good wood, no knots in me, a pole. Learning to live alone. Learning alone to live in terrace. I don't know why I'm here unless it's to be here. To be here. Oh yes, the job that I deserved like a poker player with a run of bad luck deserves a flush, and BC Met is my hole card, which I find contemptible. My dreams make no sense to me. They seem to be about things I have never heard of. My daydreams, too. Someone else I seem to be, not the old familiar me. And I'd gladly believe life was a cabaret or a carnival or a ship, except that it isn't. This mere state of being is vast. Glaciers in the arms of trees, it is a topography, it is a vast shadow. Drove up the logging road 3 miles before I realized it wasn't going anywhere. Hummingbirds at feeders, Indian boy hitchhiking, bus trudging through the slush near Quinitza. Ravens, from all points they fly to one heart of being. Big fish on the line, Kispiak's river, impossible that this ever be the other. Too many wooden bridges go slow, take your foot off the gas, each individual bear fanged, each individual plane. What am I forgetting? The fear that grows from the center of a person's being, the fear of death, the fear of woman, transmuted in the clouds into a fear of flying, the engines failing, the wind's fingers. And yet the bird escapes the wind's finger, soars upward, falls, is caught by law, by uprushing air. Fewer cigarettes, marijuana. More cigarettes, nicotine, more wine, less beer, more coffee, less tea, more whiskey, less swimming, more flying, more snow. Up there I want to be down. Down here I want to be back home, out of mortality. Wouldn't you want to be their age again, said the lady at my elbow before the framed photos of the graduating class, early 70s. What? When? I gave the expected answer. No, not all that ignorance, living in an unreal future again. But this? Back down to the motel to get cigarettes, I heard my boots crunching across the snow. I saw the women looking at me. It gladdened them that one so handsome, breezy, comes in, gets cigarettes. I dreamed last night they had extracted the cancer. A California doctor charged me $7 and wanted to keep the tissue. It was dry and spongy in his hand like dry cod out of a barrel. I agreed he could market it better. I will come to some trivial point, unable to choose the right hand or the left. The poem wrestles you to the ground. Reg takes the plane up. I argue with Ray Tixon and Rupert that night. I don't need no roller coasters. I thought we were climbing 100 miles an hour and tons of metal, two Pratt and Whitneys hurling up a grass blade vector. The seats next to me filled with sleeping women or CBC brass staring straight ahead. 13-1-78. Work channel. And behind it, the peaks, a loose orange streamer of dawn, and the pilot asks us if we're getting any heat. The rising air continually replenishing. Here I feel safe, even happy with the water below, the engines, the radio, etc. Why then does the image of this flight come back to me? What keeps me awake at night at the conscious edge, peering through vacancy? I think I can't find my way back from there, back to the place I imagine as standing at the kitchen counter with a woman I love, cutting tomatoes and peppers and drinking a cocktail. Those mountains are enormous. Every dark stipple in the snow on their sides is a tree. Hamlet says, "This is a place, a point of air and grace connected with the points I cannot see to reach, love unquestioned." More throbbing, that flower of air bending to hold us in the white petals of the mountains. Up the Portland Canal, sliding on the wind, pilot looks around as if he felt someone scared. There's only these few various motions, varied, see all the way to the coast. Above it, lots of room. He leans around, holds up his pack of number 7. Okay, smoke. So that was a section of Mountains and Air, a serial poem by George Stanley from the new long poem anthology, second edition, edited by Sharon Thiessen, published by Talon Books. So that brings us to the end of another episode of Audio Text. It was a pleasure to have an hour with you today. And if you do have any questions, comments, requests, love letters especially, please do email me at audiotextcitr@